Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to Samuel Adams Returns, the Anti-Federalist. They absolutely got it right here on Liberty Works Radio Network, where liberty does work for you. And this is Tom Nivolus, your host, and I'm delighted that you're here with me again this week. I would ask you to go check the midweek update on YouTube. It's very interesting. We had some questions about patriotism and the Antifa, and I covered that just in that short segment. From a founder's perspective of what is that relationship or not, because there is no relationship, and I bring that out. Now, what I would like to definitely do is I get everything all continue to get set up. I have my coffee, timer, all of those various things that we have going on. And as we're working through this whole program, it's going to be fun and interesting to sit back and go, okay, what just happened this week? We had a lot, as always. We're seeing the continuation of what is going on with Mr. Bannon leaving. What is that going to mean? What does it mean from your perspective and understanding of constitutionalism? And how is it that this label of nationalism is related to constitutionalism? Well, number of programs ago, I think just after President Trump got inaugurated, as a matter of fact, I'll put the references for you, or they're there, is that populism is something that is always been American. Okay, so that just clearly take it for that. But what I thought was really interesting wasn't as much as what happened with the Afghan speech, and what does that mean from a founder's original intent perspective? You know, we got to deal with that. The founder's original intent has been wiped out 100 years ago in so many different ways, especially when we take and ratchet back to the 1940s in particular, with participating in the UN. We take it back to 1914 and that, in the First World War. So we have been continuously, even prior to that, engaged in what George Washington clearly warned us about, is not to get into entanglements. We've done that. So now you have to figure out, how do you deal with those entanglements? You know, I definitely believe, like Mr. Bannon, it would be great to be able to pull out of Afghanistan, but that isn't the reality, and I think Mr. Trump stated that very well, is that when you actually sit in the Oval Office, you have to take into consideration all of the, I will call, the evils that have been foisted upon us. Now, what we need to do is pray for the wisdom that he will have the capacity and the ability to have good counsel in such a manner that he can hold true to his principles and his gut reaction of, yeah, we need to be out of Afghanistan, we need to be out of a lot of places by virtue of what is correct for we, the American people. But at the same time, the globalist entanglements have taken us into the positions that we are now. And the point is that we have to deal with those positions in such a manner that it, the complexities of it aren't something that you and I have any access to. When I was in the military, I had a lot of access to different stuff, and I still didn't have everything, but we have to understand, and which we don't understand, that's the real problem, is we don't understand what is going on, because, you know what, we have lost founder's intent, we have lost the ability to see into what government is doing. And there's a lot of reasons, and quite frankly, where I really want to start, as I reach across for my glasses, across the table here, and all of that, is take us back to something that we talked about last week from the pulpits of the American Revolution. I think this is a real baseline. I mentioned it last week, but I wanted to go back to it. It was in the year 1766, Thomas Hollis wrote to the Reverend Dr. Mayhew, quote, "More books, especially on government, are going for New England. Should those go safe, it is hoped that no principal books on the first subject will be wanting in Harvard College. From the days of Moses to these times, men of New England, brethren, use them for yourselves and for others, and God bless you." And again he said, or he wrote, "I confess to bear propensity, affection towards the people of North America, those of Massachusetts and Boston in particular, believing them to be a good and brave people. Long may they continue such. And the spirit of luxury now consuming us to the very marrow here at home, kept out of them." So what he's talking about here is that when I've mentioned before, and actually it was Mr. North that used it to say that if they could corrupt the American people with the frivolity, the luxuries, all of the excess of the continent, and he's talking about the luxuries that are there now in Britain, it is like that they're destructive. So one likeliest meaning to that end will be to watch well over their youth by bestowing on them a reasonable, manly education and selecting thereto the wisest, ablest, most accomplished of men that art or wealth can obtain for nations. Here's a, this is really important because this is why Samuel Adams Center for Political Science is extremely important as we're talking about the next generation of policymakers. Sorry, I had to put it in there because we're not seeing it, and we'll talk about that some more shortly somewhere in the program, is that what we have to do is that it is, let me step back here, it says, the most accomplished men of art or wealth can obtain, for nations rise and fall by individuals, not by numbers. As I think all history proveth, with ideas of this kind have I worked for the public library at Cambridge in New England. An eloquent writer, thoroughly imbued with the spirit of those days, remarked that, quote, "This truly ingenious Englishman, in the range and direction of his literary benefits, effectually refuted the seeming paradox that a loyal subject of the monarchy in Britain might be an ardent, intelligent friend of the cause of freedom in America. The books he sent were often political and of Republican stamp, and it remains for the precipitancy of our historians to ascertain what influence his benefaction and correspondence had in kindling the spirit which emancipated these states from the shackles of colonial subserviency by forming high-minded men who, under providence, under God, achieved our independence." Here's a quote. "Doubtless, at the favored seminary, her sons drank deeply of the writings of Milton, Harrington, Sidney, Ludlow, Marvell, and Locke. These were there, by Mr. Hollis exertions, political textbooks, and the eminent men of that day." Ladies and gentlemen, it comes back down to the number of things that we talked about last week, is that what's being taught in the universities? We're not being taught that core established principles which brought this country into being, those of Locke, those of all of those men that I listed. Let's see, let me look at their names again. Milton, Harrington, Sidney. I've told you about Sidney a number of different times. Ludlow, Marvell, and Locke. You see, what we have now is we're being taught socialism and communism and all the different PhDs and intelligentsia that want students to understand their own books, their own insanities, by which what we have in these universities is not this historical foundation. So what we definitely don't have is the education around the founder's intent, especially in regard to what? The Federalist Papers, at least? Or how about the Anti-Federalist Papers in addition? Because, as I will mention over and over, and I have in the past, is that the Anti-Federalists gave in and conceded to allowing and stop the arguments even in the various state conventions regarding what? The adoption of the Constitution, because their understanding of how it should be implemented, called constitutionalism, was something that the Federalists said that they would, you know, ascend to, that they would agree with. But as I always tell you, is that the Federalists, they lied. And no different than what we have in the political circles today, where we have, number one, we do not have the educational base by which we, the people, can understand what is going on. We haven't had that since the mid-1800s, to the extent that we have continuously been lied by then, you know, the false prophets. And you know, I brought up Jeremiah last week. I brought up Jeremiah in, I think, the midweek update as well, is that when you have false teachers, false prophets, when you then have the political environment that is led astray because of false teaching and false prophets, you know what you end up with? You're right. You absolutely end up then with the conflagration that we have now today. And you have elitists that are leading the charge, that are leading things, and then you have what we're going to talk about briefly as we move into the next segment here in a bit, is the oligarchy by which the Anti-Federalists were warning about. We have the oligarchy not only of the Senate, but what we saw even more so was a despotic oligarchy that was happening with the combination of the executive branch as well as the senatorial branch coming together, and then the judiciary wrapping around that, to the extent that you enable the judiciary to become another legislative body by virtue of its implementation, by virtue of its implementation of what it calls constitutional interpretation. So we saw a lot of that, and we continue to see a lot of that in the lower courts in particular. And so we have to spend all these gazillions of dollars to move something to the Supreme Court, which now we're seeing that we have to have a Supreme Court that will understand the structure and founder's original intent, and help eliminate the internationalism that has crept into America vis-a-vis treaty and international executive agreements, which I've talked about numerous times in other programs. But that's really the crux of it, what we see, what we are seeing. And what we're going to talk about, really what captivates everything when we come back into the next segment, is Brutus, our friend Brutus, you know, Brutus number 16. He really gets into what is happening in the context of that oligarchy relative to the Senate and the positioning of the Senate. So the Senate is very critical. This is where Obamacare didn't get passed. This is where we now have Mitch McConnell having some of the lowest ratings ever, and where we see the so-called moderates who have no idea what constitutionalism is forming what? Yeah, they're forming our policies and how we are being governed. So, ladies and gentlemen, as we take a look at all of this, come on back in the next segment when Samuel Adams is returning, has returned, and the Anti-Federalists, they absolutely did. They got it right here on Liberty Works Radio Network. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to this second segment of Samuel Adams Returns, the Anti-Federalists. They absolutely got it right here on Liberty Works Radio Network, where liberty always works for you. Yes, take a look at everything else that's going on here on Liberty Works Radio Network, and because it is you and for you, what? It's funded by you. So, you know what? Take a look at all the hosts and hostesses and please contribute. It's really interesting programming, and I really hope that you will participate and take what you learn and get your feet on the street to make a difference. And this is Tom Navolis, your host, and I'm delighted to have you back. I was going to take, and during the break, a look at something that I found extremely interesting this morning. And let me see, I'll go ahead and I'm going to cue some stuff up while I take and talk with you. But you know what? I wanted to go back once again on this statement that I made in the first segment, because I think it's extremely critical that as we understand this letter from Thomas Hollis to Dr. Mayhew, is that the last segment in here that he talks about is that you have to educate, manly education, that being an education that gets into the very essence of the realities of who we are as a people, understanding the fundamentals of biblical truth, and in addition to that, taking and developing the root principles of good governance. And he says here again, I will say, is that for nations rise and fall by individuals, not by numbers, as I think all history proveth. So what really got me interested this morning and really got me taking in and driving when we look at the oligarchy, but you know, so some of the things around the Senate and what we're going to talk about with Brutus is the fact that the Senate was always supposed to represent the states, and to the extent that what Brutus talks about here, and I'm going to get ahead of myself, is that the only preservation of republicanism and the Confederacy is within the context of the Senate. So meaning that to have a republic function, according to the way that the founders intended, and I'll get more into that, is that the Senate needed to represent those other individual bodies of the states. Whereas we know that the, if you will call it, the democracy component of our federal government is within Congress, because it represents the people directly. All right. To the extent that the words that the Senate would become aristocracy or represent the aristocracy is, you know, kind of extensive, because at that time there were a lot of people, even though many individuals were sitting in the states already as far as their legislatures, there were still those that were largely represented by merchants and attorneys and things like that. And so I think that there was always that question that, yes, but if we did, that there would be a potentials for people of money, of wealth, or of power of some other nature to be part of the state legislatures and potentially pick the senators. Well, it was also up to the people, because remember, is that the people, once again, at the state level, vote for every representative. They vote for the House, they vote for their Senate, they vote for their governors, they vote for their judiciary. So in essence, everything that happens within the context of a true democratic republic type of blend is there within the states, in the body of the states. And as entities, they should have a right to exist in that greater formulation, and then we have a limited national government. But as it was always warned, is that the Anti-Federalists said at some point in time, guess what's going to happen? You are going to see the insanity of what? You're going to see the insanity of the federal take and obviate everything with the states. So, you know, we're really struggling through right now in everything that's going on relative to the states, and what does it mean to have a real republic? And worse yet, what's the separation of powers within what's going on in the rest of the federal government? That's the hard part. What I was looking 4, and I'll probably find it. I'll wait until I get into the next segment, so at the next break, I'll go ahead and get into it. But when we talk about and go back to that reference that I made to the idea that nations rise and fall by individuals, becomes really critical when we start talking about the Antifa, we talk about Media Matters, we talk about all of these other aspects of things that they're funded by George Soros. And then you have, oh, the libertarians, yes, look, pure libertarian perspective is one that is contrary to founders' intent. And what I was trying to find for you, and I will find it again at the break, is that even the Freedom Caucus is funded by the Koch brothers. It was something like 80% of those 30 members are funded by these globalist libertarians. Okay? That's who they are. So when I talk about founders' original intent, it has to apply to the Freedom Caucus as well. Because when you really get digging into it, I'm not sure that they have our We the People's real agenda and intent there for us, or what it means on what Donald Trump was talking about for us. So we can elect somebody like a Donald Trump and have a populist movement, have this movement that is from a founder's intent perspective. But in reality, when you have these interests of individuals greater than the numbers, as said here, wow. It becomes very, very interesting. One of the other things, again, in that introduction from the pulpits of the American Revolution, as I read a couple notes that I have, is that with what spirit, with what wisdom, with what learning and power they preached the liberty of the gospel, let these pages, their own words, bear witness. And that's into the book. Go get the book. I gave you the reference last week. The story of their passive endurance, their personal bravery, and manly participation in their country's service is the years of her deepest misery, and the years of her deepest misery belongs not here. They yet wait for justice from the historians. We have room for only one or two illustrations, and one of them here is that in Danvers, the deacon of the parish was elected captain of the Minutemen, and the minister his lieutenant. Wow, isn't that interesting? The pastor was the lieutenant of the deacon. Okay, you got that? The company, after its field exercise, would sometimes repair to the meeting house, being the church, to hear a patriotic sermon or partake of an entertainment at the townhouse where the zealous Sons of Liberty would exhort them to fight bravely for God and their country. At Lunenburg, the Minute Company, after going through several military maneuvers, marched to the public house where the officers had provided an elegant entertainment for the company, a number of respectable inhabitants of the town, and patriotic ministers of the town. Adjacent towns would come. They then marched in military procession to the meeting house, being the church, where the Reverend Mr. Adams delivered an excellent sermon suitable to the occasions from Psalm 25, verse 3. Mr. Frothingham, from whose excellent history of the siege of Boston these instances are taken, says that the journals of the period abound in paragraphs of similar interest. I wanted to bring that out, is that it goes to my constant perspective, is that as much as we need to hear the truth of the gospel message for personal salvation, we need it. I'm a sinner. You are. If you don't believe that, then think about what you think about. And then think about how you act what you think about. And then how does that align even with just the basic Ten Commandments? I'll tell you, for me, I blow it. So I'm thankful for that which is preached from that gospel perspective. But what is not done is talked about from the pulpit, the whole idea. And this is the pulpit stood up against, you know, goofy rules like 501c3 nonsense, which, you know, the Johnson nonsense that Mr. Trump has taken in, hopefully getting rid of fully. But the point being is that they were patriotic sermons. There's sermons in there, I'll tell you, just over and over in the Old Testament. I can preach them, so I don't understand, or I can exhort from them because I'm not a preacher, but I can exhort from them to the extent that I know that God is active in the political environment such that we are to stand on the liberty, especially from a New Testament perspective, on the liberty of Jesus Christ and what he does for lives as well as systems, as well as how we should govern in a moral and virtuous manner from the extent of our founder's original intent. Now, the founder's original intent also was against the likes of libertarianism. So then when you start looking at what was happening with the likes of the Koch brothers, and now we have these oligarchies, it gets into this whole perspective of what Brutus number 16 is actually talking about. And just in a summation of that, he said, what type of checks and balances are there is in the summary, you know, that curtail judicial abuse? What is the question that begins this final essay from Buddhists? And the answer is, first of all, the separation of powers. But in the end, there must be a supreme power within the context of the Supreme Court. Then it must be within us, the power of the people, ultimately. Then when we get into what the Senate is all about, on the one hand, it preserves the principles and representations of the states, as I mentioned in the first segment, and what is federalism, and what is it from a republic perspective. And then on the other hand, the Senate will possess a strange mixture of legislative, executive, and judicial powers, which in his opinion clash with each other. And that's so true. They will clash with each other, especially when you take and you consider that the ideas of being the court for impeachment. And then when you look back at the judiciary, we haven't impeached any judges in a long period of time. So the Senate is, number one, I think that the articles of impeachment need to be drawn up in the House on a lot of the judges that are out there, but it'll never happen because we have, you know, a corrupt globalist legislature, both House and Senate. And to the extent that we can say, and it's very interesting, and I love the song on the homepage for Liberty Works Radio Network, is that judges don't make law, which is true, but to the extent that judges do make law is something that is part of the perversions that we have to deal with, and Jefferson fought against, and actually Brutus even talked about, but it has to come back to us. And how do we take and interact with the legislatures in such a manner that we can correct the judiciary? I don't know what's going to happen with that. And how does the Senate take and develop those whole perspectives on that judicial review? Man, we got a lot of work to do. So it comes back to what Thomas Hollis was talking about the individuals. And it comes back to you. And what can you do? What are you going to do? And how are you going to participate in ensuring that Founder's original intent is something that's taught at home? And I'm going to give you a website that you can go to that I use all the time, in addition to the Founder's Constitution, which I highly recommend that you get a copy of or at least use it online when we come back, because Samuel Adams, he's returned, and the anti-federalists absolutely got it right as to why we have what we have today here on Liberty Works Radio Network, where liberty works for you. Come on back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to Samuel Adams Returns, the Anti-Federalist Got It Right, here on Liberty Works Radio Network, where, yes, liberty is. It's working for you if you believe in it. That's what it's going to come down to. Do you believe in it? And this is Tom Navulis, your host. And not only do you believe in liberty, do you understand it? And are you willing to work for it and sacrifice for it as our founding fathers did. I think that is some of the most impressive readings that I have been doing lately, especially in the Founders Constitution, which, again, I have it behind me, four volumes and the one on the table right here. And the various articles that I've been reading is, you know, again, what did they sacrifice in everything that they've done for us, their posterity, and what are we doing? Our education system is in shambles. Political oligarchy is taking and bringing what de Tocqueville said would happen on the soft despotism. We're seeing a form of tyranny because, as I read to you earlier in the letter from Thomas Hollis to Dr. Mayhew, it comes into that whole idea of, you know, what was happening in England at that time, in that they had all of, I'll say what I said before from Mr. North, was the frivolity. What was happening there in England was including the spirit of luxury, and that's what everybody wants. They want something for nothing. They think they need to have the greatest house, multiple cars, multiple TVs, multiple cell phones, whatever. The luxury, we think they're items that are needed and useful, but in reality, they're luxuries. And when all of the sports insanities that are going on, well, the luxuries get beyond us. And they do exactly what in 1766 Thomas Hollis was writing about, is that they pervert then the people, the souls of the people, the spirits of the people, to the extent then that liberty becomes meaningless. And so 10 years difference. In 1766, when Hollis sent all these books to Harvard about liberty, about republicanism, and then what happened by 76, and then as I was stating in the letter in the first segment, is that the historians now are destroying it to the extent even more so we have the likes of Antifa and destroying our statues and our history and protesting against that, our culture. And then in addition to that, we have the media being subversive by supporting all of those activities. And then we have the courts allowing it to happen. So we have these total perversions, which were predicted by the Anti-Federalists. And not only that, do we have, as we were talking about, is that the one person, as he said here at the end, and I just got to hammer this one home, is that finally, you know, the nations rise and fall by individuals, not numbers, as history proveth out. Now, the individuals, I talked about source, but then at the same time, I did find that article that I was telling you about. It's by a gentleman by the name of Robert Wasinger, and he talks about the libertarian Koch brothers. And libertarianism, my friends, there's no moral content to it. Pure libertarianism, in many ways, is anarchy. Or if you take and you look at the other side of it, by the way in which they can manipulate those in elected into office, or those that have the power base or control those that are potentially in the bureaucracy someplace, then that runs on the other side of what I showed you last week, is that it becomes part of that despotic government control, and not what was intended in our constitutionalism of a free republic and rule of law. But anyway, go read the article. You can go Google it. It is called, I thought it was very interesting, by Wasinger. It's Kick the Freedom, and then in parens, a.k.a. Koch, close paren, Caucus to the Curb. And that's where it talks about that 80% of those in the Freedom Caucus are actually funded by the Koch brothers. Wow. That was shocking to me to understand that. So, you know, let's dig in on the Senate a little bit. First, the judiciary. which is very, very clearly spoken about in Brutus number 16. He talks about how the courts, and again, at that time, they did not have all of the smaller federal court system. In fact, some of the things that led to problems in the early days was the definition of the court and the reality that some of the justices in the Supreme Court were actually sitting in the circuit court as well. So when you looked at, they traveled and the circuit courts went to the various regions, but they were Supreme Court justices that were part of the circuit court. So it became very complex in that how do you adjudicate something at a circuit court level, and then if it is appealed then to the Supreme Court, now you have the same person that is sitting within both jurisdictions. It became very interesting in something that I talk about in The Tale of Two Constitutions, as well as, you know, the book's getting done. The book is getting done. A Tale in Tyranny. The Anti-Federalists Got It Right, The Tale of Two Constitutions. Long title, but it's a bit long book, too. So when we get then down into this whole idea that the Senate, they're elected by the state legislatures, not by the people, and he goes through this thing. They serve for 6 years, vacancies happen, then the legislature of the state can put someone in. See, no person can be a senator without being over 30 years old and having been in America for at least 9 years. Now, what he brings out, again, is this idea that if there's anything in the plan is that the apportionment of members of the Senate among the state is not according to the numbers or the importance of the states, but it is equal. This, on the plan of a consolidated government, is unequal and improper. But is proper on the system of a confederation. On this principle, I approve of it. So, ladies and gentlemen, the 17th Amendment, I always harp on that because it takes federalism and puts a big spike into it. It just nails it. I mean, it just puts a real nail into the form of constitutionalism that the founders intended when the Senate is elected by the general population. Because there's no way that, you know, two dudes or a dude and a dudette or dudettes can take and legislate for, you know, millions of people in a state. You know, how does that work? It can't. It just does not. So it frees them to become an oligarchy. I wanted to jump over to Cato number 2, which was October 11, 1787. And from that, I just wanted, there was a really neat little kind of poem that he wrote. I don't know if it's a poem, it's a statement. It goes to the citizens of the state of New York. And he quote, this is all in quotes. Remember, oh my friends, the laws, the rights, the generous plan of power delivered down by your renowned forefathers, so dearly bought, the price of so much blood. Oh, let it never perish in your hands, but piously transmit it to your children. I know that goes off beat maybe a little bit about the Senate, but not really, because I think, you know, we kind of wound it around and put it together. And I think more so it takes and drives to home that idea that we have to preserve our nation, and we're not. We're hearing so many different elements out there that would rather talk about socialism, globalism, communism, and the destruction of the fundamentals of America and our American culture, that, you know, it's very, very interesting. Wrapping back into the Senate, Mr. Lee objected to the Constitution from the perspective of you know, Virginia's point of view, and I'm not talking about Robert E. Lee, I'm talking about a different Lee, in that the Senate was there for six-year duration. You have this whole same component that it is not something that it is there or can become this oligarchy. So where are the checks and balances? What is true representation? What we're finding, and it's Richard Henry Lee, what we're finding is that truism of oligarchy has occurred. But one of the things that I have to go back to, and this is where we need to look at it from the action item perspective. What do? We talked about all of these problems, and I don't want to be one that I see on social media and Facebook all the time that does nothing. And even Sean Hannity and some of the others, they complain. They bring to you all of these ugly issues that are going on. Some talk about solutions, but the solutions are so wrapped up in emotionalism that I think we have to look at what is it that matters. And what really matters is how are we going to govern and how do we do that to this poem, if you will. Remember, oh my friends, the laws, the rights, the generous plan of power delivered down by your renowned forefathers, so dearly bought, the price of so much blood. Oh, let it never perish in your hands, but piously transmit it to your children. We haven't done that well in the last 100+ years because our educational system has been destroyed by humanist and socialist and so on. Ladies and gentlemen, what I'm asking you to do as a primary action item from everything that we're talking about this week and the reality of this oligarchy, we're never going to take and come back around unless we correct our educational programs. You need to go to your school district meetings. And before that, though, you need to take your school board members out for coffee. One of the things that I brought up with the members, the young people that are coming into the Samuel Adams Center for Political Science, sacps.org, is that you have to learn that just going to a board meeting doesn't do any good because they've already made decisions. You need to personally get to know your representatives on school boards, in the legislature. That's what you have to do. Oh my, I have to be responsible. I have to go out and do something. Yes, we have to. That's what Founders' original intent was, is that we knew those that would represent us in city government, county government, school boards, water boards, all of that. We're supposed to know those people. And those people are supposed to know us. So that's why others of the anti-federalists were saying that there were insufficient numbers in Congress. They would rather see the 2,000, the representation of the first original amendment that held that representation would be one for every 50,000 people. But that's another story, and some other people are doing work around that. But what you need to do is remember, oh my friends, and do something so that you can piously transmit these freedoms, these cherished rights to your children. And the only way you're going to do that is by taking back the educational system. And it's destructive. You have to go especially into your state legislatures and tell them to reconstruct education to the point that you're willing to become party and control of it. So get control of government is to get control of education. So come on back next week when Samuel Adams returns and the anti-federalists, yes, they did. They got it right.